Hello and welcome to Need to Know, your weekly investment podcast brought to you by the experts at Coutts. I'm Sarah Muir and I'm joined as always by Coutts CIO Alan Higgins. Each week on the podcast, we look at the three things investors need to know for the week ahead. Alan, fresh from Bloomberg this morning and still actually looking remarkably fresh, considering. I don't know if that's good makeup or what, but anyway. Alan, what do we need to know this week?
Good morning. You know, you're absolutely right. Fantastic male makeup that they use at Bloomberg. I'm looking surprisingly good. Not that it matters for this, but three things. Okay, so look. Events in Russia and Russia stroke Ukraine, people are talking about it. Just a quick reflection on that. Yeah. One, two, going back to the UK and the poor inflation performance continued. Another look. I've looked for a country that is performing as badly. I found one, which we've mentioned before. Mm. And then finally, this, you know, the stocks. So it used to be hard to find a bull. There are more bulls coming our way, but I've also got right in front of me the bear case for equities from Morgan Stanley. So looking at the bull and bear case again for stocks.
Okay, good. All right, then. Well, let's start off with then the news that sort of was dominating the headlines at the start of the week about the Wagner Group and their attempted coup. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the name of the leader of the Wagner Group, because I will probably offend any Russian listeners we might have. But yeah, thoughts on that and how that's impacted markets?
So obviously, we all find it absolutely fascinating from a news perspective. But coming to the job and the fiduciary responsibility of managing money, really, there's very little going on. There was almost zero market reaction. Just at a micro level of interest, some defense stocks were down. At one stage in our home market, British Aerospace was down 3%. I think it ended the day down 2%. So the interesting thinking there is that Russia is weakened and therefore less arms will be bought in future. So a micro impact, who knows? But in general, as you know, Sarah, and people hopefully have heard this before, we definitely lean against any geopolitical risks.
Yeah. I mean, history tells us, doesn't it, that markets do generally bounce back after these geopolitical upsets.
They do. And I've got a book in front of me, Geopolitical Alpha by Marco Papich. And actually, a colleague, Monique Wong, put me onto this. And we've done it internally, but they've got a huge list of geopolitical events. And they basically go on and say, in a geopolitical event, close your eyes and buy. But, you know, markets need to come off on average. So I'm going to look, because I've given our data, but, you know, this is from the book, Geopolitical Alpha, Marco Papich. And they go back to, when did they go back as far as, it looks like 1956, we even went back to World War II. 1956, so their first one is the Hungarian Revolution, 1956, and they've got Cuban Missile Crisis, and they go all the way out to the current situation now. So on average, the market falls 7%. Actually, that's the median as of the average, because there are some big losses. So the median fall is 7%, and then 1 year later, up 11. So pretty similar numbers you've heard before. But it's just interestingly to have it, you know, independently verified in this book. And it's an excellent book. And it's interesting for people who are interested in history, but also just more evidence that in a market downturn, you do lean against it. It's not fundamental to being a shareholder.
Mm. Okay. I mean, but is it fair to say we are seeing a little bit of a risk-off mood at the moment, though?
We have done, yeah, but that's not related. And that happened before the events in Russia, Ukraine over the last week. Simply, we had a very good rise, a rise of 20% from the bottom in the US. I'm talking about the US here. And we were overdue a correction, certainly.
Yeah, okay. I guess potentially markets might be watching to see if Putin was deposed. That would raise the sort of the level of uncertainty in Russia, I guess, as who would succeed him. We could see perhaps a little bit more volatility in light of that?
We could do, because look, I'm sure everyone's reading about this, and I think people by now know that if Putin's deposed, it doesn't necessarily mean we have democracy. In fact, it's super unlikely that we have democracy, and whoever comes in, it could be just as hard line. So, yeah, it's just something we don't want to focus on. But I mean, the main message is largely for markets, ignore it for now. But do remember, next time there's big news, it could be anything in the world. You know, there's many things we've gone through. You want to buy into it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So as you say, we saw actually very little market reaction to the news of the attempted coup by the Wagner Group over the war in Ukraine. And as you said, I mean, you quote the reference there from Geopolitical Alpha by Marco Pafek. I think we're going to have a need to know book club. We're going to have to start having a little reading list for listeners.
Good idea. But
certainly, if you go back to sort of decades and you look at the impact of geopolitical events on markets, the median fall immediately afterwards is 7%, and 1 year later, markets were up 11%. Okay, so that's the sort of geopolitics. Now, back to the UK again, which seems to be one of our favourite subjects at the moment, well, understandably, but we had some not great news as far as inflation was concerned last week, didn't we?
So UK inflation, oh dear, 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 where do we start? So the numbers, so the headlines are 8.7, so it's down, but not down as much. For example, the United States is at 4. Okay. Yeah. But what really concerned people is that core's at 7.1. So core's excluding food and energy. I think a lot of people know about higher food prices and, of course, energy. And these are at high levels. For example, core inflation in the Eurozone and the US is more around 5. So it is materially higher. And it's the question, I've got the Economist in front of me, a big piece on, you know, reasons why. And as I've said before, these are all theories. But I have found, dare I say, you know, an economy that people respect, which is worse than the UK.
Okay.
The Beyoncé effect. Remember that?
I was just going to say, this is the one we talked about last week, the Beyoncé blip, which apparently now they've come out and said is nothing to do with Beyoncé at all. It's just... it's actually something more fundamental, isn't it? Their inflation.
Well,
struggles.
Yeah. So the Beyoncé blip was probably a 1 month blip. So that was higher inflation. Beyoncé did her first concert in Sweden. Loads of people flew over there. And basically, the Swedish numbers are 9.7 and 7. So Sweden's got core inflation the same as the UK, but it's got a headline at 9.7. So much, much, well, not much, but so as bad as the UK. So, okay. Some, including Danske Bank, put it down, or at least just the 1 month numbers, to the Beyoncé blip. We've mentioned that before. There was a concert, you know, people went across. And it's quite interesting. I did a bit of research. I've spoken to two real Swedes.
Okay.
One works for Morgan Stanley, one works for Columbia Threadneedle. You know where they are. And they both mentioned Beyoncé. But they put it down mainly to the weakness of the currency. So for listeners, okay, if you want to do a city break, Stockholm or maybe Gothenburg is the place to go, because sterling hasn't been particularly strong, but over 5 years, sterling is much stronger than the Swedish krona. And over the last year, sterling's up 10% versus the Swedish krona. So most, my Swedish contacts, and from what I read, put it down to the weakness of the currency. And this makes it a little bit concerning for the UK, because if we get things wrong in the UK, dare I say, like the period when we had Liz Truss in power, when we had higher rates and much weaker currency, then we could have imported inflation. So a bit of a warning that the Bank of England need to get inflation down, if you like. They've got a tricky path. They need to get inflation down, but without causing so much distress in the economy that they crater the currency.
Okay. But, I mean, they are struggling to tame inflation. There's been quite a lot of criticism of the Bank of England, and you've not you know, been backward in coming forward about it. Is part of the problem with the Bank of England that, yes, they've been raising rates, and we saw a 50 basis point raise last week. Is the problem that they're not seem to be doing it very, that, or they seem to be doing it reluctantly? Is that the issue, and that people don't really take them seriously with their sort of hawkishness?
That's probably a little bit unfair, but I think one way of, if I turn that around a bit, is that, yeah, reluctant. I think they are now hawkish. They raise rates by 50 basis points, but it took them a while to get there, whereas Jerome Powell really embraced it, raising rates. Mm. By the way, in Sweden, rates are only 3.5%. The Riksbank, okay, Central Bank of Sweden, are only 3.5%. Mm. So, you know, it's, whereas, as we know, we're at 5%. So it's not just the Bank of England. But yes, because they had a forecast that inflation would get back to 2% very quickly. To be fair, so did several in the private sector have this forecast. So if you have, if your work tells you that inflation is going to get back to 2% quickly, why would you over-tighten? Whereas the US kind of had an approach, well, maybe inflation will get to 2, but we need to tighten earlier and more dramatically. Or dramatically is probably the wrong word, but more. We saw several 50 basis point increases in the US. So I know where you're coming from, but that's the reason why. So interesting situation in Sweden. So UK is not alone, but I had to search hard because traditional countries that are higher inflation countries like Italy are performing somewhat better than the UK. So Sweden's a standout. And Sweden's always been a relatively expensive place. Yeah. A long time ago, I did have a great client. The Stockholm School of Economics was a client of mine, their endowment fund. It was so long ago. So I used to go regularly and also to try and win the great Swedish pension accounts, the AP Fondens. Never succeeded. But hey, I continue to try. But I always used to find it fairly expensive for that glass of wine after.
For my couple of visits to Sweden. Yeah. Well, I haven't been to Sweden in a long time, but certainly that was my experience when I was covering equestrian events in Sweden. So I guess the question is then, the challenge for the Bank of England. I mean, the Fed have got the luxury of being able to pause and sit back and see how their monetary policy is impacting inflation. The Bank of England doesn't have that luxury, do they?
No, so, but it's really tricky. They can't hate crater or the economy because that would be too risky for the currency. If we look at the Swedish example, and there will be an element of panic because they have an awful lot of debt to basically sell, like most countries. So, they need to take care. So 50 basis points was well received by the market. I have to say that the last rate increase, and there is a lot of demand for gilts. There's articles in the FT virtually every day saying, you know, individuals, pension plans, there is good demand for gilts because we haven't seen these yields for probably over 15 years. So a narrow course, but no, they can't go on and on and on raising rates because that would do significant damage.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially, then we're looking at the UK inflation. The core CPI came out last week at 7.1%, going up instead of going down. Everybody else, it seems to be going down, apart from Sweden. Which, whether or not we'd want to blame Beyonce for that, we don't know. But certainly, one of the theories is it's the weaker Swedish currency that seems to be impacting their inflation. And certainly, that's not something we want to avoid in the UK. But the Bank of England have got a very difficult job ahead of them if they're going to bring inflation under control without damaging the currency or damaging the economy. Okay, well then let's sort of try and end on a slightly more positive note. You were set the task a couple of weeks ago to look for some bulls, and you did manage to find one or two. But I guess it's the bear versus the bull case. What are the bulls saying at the moment, and how are they different to what the bears are saying?
So a month ago, it was very hard to find a bull out there amongst not our investment research, but almost anyone. And I found a guy, Tom Lee and Fun Strat, who basically put it was one of the few who was out there. More recently, now that the market's rallied 20%, we've got some changes. We've got Bank of America and Merrill Lynch, for example. They've basically done their research and show that once the stock market is in bull market territory, that's defined as plus 20%, it's something like 8 times out of 10, the market continues to rise, and they don't want to bet against that. So Bank of America and Merrill Lynch have changed, as have Goldman Sachs. They're looking for slightly better earnings. So in a way, the bullish argument looks a little bit weaker, I would say, because they're responding to the rally, whereas holding their own, I've got in front of me, Morgan Stanley, that they remain bearish. And, it's interesting, I'm reading, over the past few weeks, we've met with dozens of clients, vigorous debate across varying topics affecting the markets. So they stand by a significant decline in earnings, and which implies a much weaker economy in the second half of the year. They're looking maybe a little bit early, but this guy, Michael Wilson, is the head of equity strategy here. He has got a great track record, to be fair. He's obviously been wrong this year. He's been bearish all year. But that is the main case. So we shall see. My instinct would be, for its worth, is that he can be partly right. I can definitely see a weaker economy. No one's talking about Silicon Valley Bank anymore, but the commercial real estate problems, the 4,000 regional banks, more challenging, getting a loan, leading indicators are down of the US economy. Business sentiment, purchasing managers indices, which we talk about, is down, a good leading indicator for GDP. So there's plenty going down, but I can see the markets quickly looking to the 2024 recovery. And okay. Just in my experience, equity markets can surprise everyone, maybe a bit like what we saw quarter two 2020 in the COVID pandemic. Markets started looking forward to better earnings. So anyway, that's the bull and the bear case. I guess it's interesting, Sarah, you said it's good news. I guess the risk is markets have gone up because no one was bullish, virtually.
Okay.
If everyone turns bullish, that is not so good. Markets then can go down.
So what is it, Goldman? So you've said Morgan Stanley are being a sort of more bearish. They still see that this significant decline in earnings. And of course, that's going to be a big focus when we get Q2 earnings out. And I'm sure we'll be hopefully getting our US equity expert back on, Howard Sparks, to talk about that, because that's going to be an important one. But what is it that Bank of America and Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs are seeing that Morgan Stanley are not seeing? Is it just that stat around about, when we get into a bull market territory, that equities then generally go up? Is it just a question of time frame, or are there other? I mean, you talked about there's lots of sort of all these leading indicators are still pointing to a downturn. So, is it a question of what time frame they're looking at? What's the difference? What are they seeing differently?
So, slightly different things. They're not being super long term. So, it's not that. So, they're not being like I am, if you like, with my argument, somewhat longer term. Bank of America, Merrill Lynch specifically pulled out this 20% rule. It's not the only thing they focus on, but the main thing. Whereas Goldman's argument was more, okay, P ratios are 20, they're elevated, but the market can live with these P ratios because interest rates aren't high enough. And that's an argument that we've made on a structural basis. Those who've listened to us before, we talked about rates need to get to about 8% historically before the case for equities is really undermined. So everyone has a slightly different argument, but on the bullish side, or rather, they emphasise different factors. To be fair, rather than emphasising just the same factor.
So Goldman Sachs are saying then that equities are not cheap, but they're not expensive either.
Yeah. Well, probably a little bit more nuanced than that. They're definitely not cheap. They're basically saying, if you like, okay, markets may be expensive at 20 times earnings, but the market can live with that. It can live with that with the interest rate structure where they are. And you know, at the very start of my career, we haven't talked about this, but if you want to be really extreme, 1987, US interest rates were 10 and the PE ratio was 20. Now, that did result in a crash, but, you know, the 4 or 5 year returns during that 1980, including that 1987 crash, were very, very strong for equities. But that's proper overvaluation. We're nowhere near that. So, that, I mean, that could be one way of paraphrasing the Goldman's argument, is that 1987 was a 20 PE and a 10% yield. Today, we've got a 20 PE and a 3.8% bond yield. I'm kind of paraphrasing Goldman Sachs, but just not overvalued enough, maybe a way of putting it. But okay, for us, I mean, look, we're, you know, just as a reminder for those who, Coutts is conservative. By no means are we super bullish or bearish. We're conservative. We're hovering fairly close to the benchmarks on equity weight. And, you know, that's where we stand. And certainly we've been much lower in equity weights previously. So, I'm, you know, it's not a bad place to be as conservative. It makes sense because you don't want to be outright bearish, given it's just, until recently, it's been a consensus trade, one. And two, it's the most anticipated recession ever.
Yeah, exactly. I guess then my final question then is, what happens if we don't get a recession? What happens to markets?
Depends on inflation, Sarah. That's a great question. Depends on inflation. So this is the other scenario. So inflation comes down. And I'm talking about the United States. We talked about the UK earlier. Yeah. That's almost irrelevant. So US inflation comes down to 2 point something with no recession. Boom. Or the Higgins trademark surge in markets coming. it would be unlikely. It's a narrow path, but I guess you have to price that in.
Yeah. Okay. All right then. Well, so as you say, well, you managed to find a few bulls out there, but they have a slightly different reasons perhaps for being bullish. We've got that sort of metric of we're in bull market territory. And so we would expect markets to keep on going up once we've got into bull market territory, i.e. markets are up 20%. Goldman Sachs is slightly more nuanced, as you explained, which is that essentially then they're saying that markets can live with current valuations with interest rates where they are. Meanwhile, we've got Morgan Stanley remaining bearish because they see a decline in earnings. And that will be, a big focus for Q2 earnings when that comes out. Especially, I'm very intrigued to see how the Magnificent Seven perform and report, I should say, rather than perform. Thank you very much, Alan. A reminder that the views expressed in this podcast are not intended to constitute investment advice, are accurate at the time of recording, and are subject to change. Thank you very much, Alan, for joining me this morning. As I said, fresh off Bloomberg. I don't know if you can go and see a recording of that. Alan, is that available for people if they go to Bloomberg.com?
Or? It may be, yeah. You get to see this incredible male makeup. I don't think I've ever looked so good. Because it was a new show, so it was a brand new show for Bloomberg. I've never had so much makeup put on me. Normally, and I've done Bloomberg a lot, for 20 years. And normally they just flash something on. But because it was their first ever show, the young lady, because it was a young lady who was putting makeup on me, spent ages. And apparently I look good, people say. So there you go. Male makeup. Send me some in the post.
I've heard great reports, not just about your appearance, but about what you were saying as well. But anyway, as I said, don't forget to check out the podcast page on Coutts.com. Subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Spotify or Google Podcasts. And you can also access previous Need to Knows, including a recent episode in which Alan and I chatted with Coutts Head of Foreign Exchange, Ray Monahan, and Ray shared some very trenchant views on thoughts on Bitcoin and what it takes to be a successful trader. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more Need to Know. Until then, bye for now. Thank you.